It's a big day in podcast land. Here on the Bullseye Podcast, I've got Brian Brummett live across from me. Peter's gone. It's time to get rowdy.
You know, Peter always gets these great introductions. I was really expecting something more than that for me.
I can't give you his introductions. You get that when you're the president. You get all those introductions. I can't give it to the little people.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, no, thanks, everybody. Welcome to the Bullseye Podcast. Like I said, Peter is out of the office, so I have begged my cohort here, Brian Brummett, to come sit in and share some information with us. Brian is one of our junior portfolio managers here with AFI. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's really exciting to do this.
It was funny. You're one of our tens and tens of listeners.
Who's going to listen to this one if I'm here?
I know. It's like we're taking away one of our audience members just for you to come chat. But hopefully we can fill in that spot. So, Brian, why don't you kind of tell everybody about yourself, give them some information. I think they've gotten to know Peter and I, but you're the new guy in the podcast chair. So
you all make it seem easy too. So
well,
you
it's do a good I mean job. It's a, you literally just sit here and talk.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't get any easier than that. You just talk.
So I'm the junior portfolio manager here at AFI, which pretty much means that I get to be professionally curious. I get to research and figure out why different things are happening and then help people navigate through them. I have my bachelor's degree in economics and my master's in business administration. I have a little family that's made up of me and my wife. We have two dogs and Roger the cat. And Lacey and I got married on Star Wars Day, May 4th in 2019, which I would argue makes me the largest and biggest Star Wars fan in the entire office, particularly this week since Peter's out.
Well, Peter's out. Yeah, I was going to say that. You guys and your Star Wars, you're just serious about
it. Have you
it.
Learned any more facts since the red lightsabers go with bad guys?
No, but here's what I think. I think that we should have a once and for all, like end-all be-all office battle of who's the biggest Star Wars fan, and you guys should bring your lightsabers in and just wear it out.
We definitely need to wait until Peter's next vacation.
I remember the red lightsaber is bad.
Yes.
Bad guys.
Yes. Darth Vader. Yes.
All the cool people. So would you have a red one or would you have like a green one?
I think I'd have a green one. I definitely go more towards the light side.
Boo. You sissy, boo.
No, they wouldn't be anything if they didn't have the dark side there, too. But
yeah.
We do a good job balancing each other out.
Well, that's good. I, that's some dedication getting married on May the 4th. You all didn't dress up, though, did
no,
you?
No.
Please, and, God, and tell me you didn't dress
despite
up.
Despite my best effort, she didn't walk down the aisle to Darth Vader's song or anything like that. But
That would have been pretty epic, though.
It would have been.
Well, you can always, give it 10 years and you guys can, what do people do? Like renew their vows,
right,
and stuff like that.
We can
that.
Change our lightsabers to red if,
that's
if
right.
that feels appropriate.
Oh man, I feel like we're going down a rabbit hole here. But so we've been, back and forth all week trying to think of something, something relevant to discuss today. And, Peter and I talked a little bit about, the insane gas prices on the last episode, and I think we need to talk real estate.
Absolutely.
Because the real estate market is also insane, and it has been insane for, over a year now?
At least since the pandemic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and I think there's a lot of this information that's very, very crucial to a lot of what we do as well. And especially focusing on supply and demand. like business 101, supply and demand, or is that, would that be?
It's the econ 101.
Econ 101. Yeah, yeah. See, it's been a long time.
It's part of business.
It's part of business. But, you know, talking about supply and demand in the real estate market is really eye-opening. When we started looking at this stuff, it all kind of started making sense to me now. Like house prices, this, that. All of the stuff, it's like we're connecting all the dots here. So, in that spirit, we got a lot of really good information looking at the supply side. So, one thing that, you know, these things are really interesting to me, you know, according to the U.S. Census Bureau of Data, from 1968, which is when they actually started keeping the records, through 2008, builders constructed an average of 1.53 million houses every year. It's a lot of houses.
It's a lot of houses.
It's a lot of houses. So, obviously, we know in 2008, all hell broke loose.
Housing crisis.
Housing crisis. It was just bad, 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 bad. We've not really recovered from that fully, because since the 2008 crisis, now the average is 936,000 homes built every year. So we didn't get back to, you know.
That's about a 40% drop.
Yeah, yeah, 40% drop. And we just never made it back.
We never made it back. And then the pandemic happened, and that further exacerbated the situation. Lumber prices, for instance, are up 150% since the pandemic started.
Which is insane.
Which is insane. And then in addition to that, we're having a labor shortage. So even the companies that are wanting to build these houses
right.
aren't able to because they can't hire a crew.
Yeah, there's no one to do it. So we've kind of got ourselves into a hole here.
We have, and we're so backtracked on how long we've been undersupplying houses that we're not only going to have to start doing better, we're going to have to make up for time.
Right. That seems overwhelming to me because you're exactly right. Like, we've been so in the dumps with it for so long that we're not even, we would do our best to catch up, let alone surpass where we had been.
Right.
It just seems impossible now with the lumber prices, with the, you know, all of the workforce, no one wanting to work, essentially. I just don't know how you recover from that.
The supply side has to be figured out
right.
to meet the demand side.
Well, so we've kind of opened up that box of the supply side. Obviously, there's just not as many houses being built.
Right.
So taking that, let's table it over here on the right and looking at it from a demand side. Won't you tell us a little bit about what we have as far as folks coming in?
So we have a lot of generations trying to accomplish similar, the same things. The millennial generation is finally getting into the housing market. A lot of us pushed it off longer than previous generations have.
I want to say I'm a proud millennial.
I am too. I am too. Those of us that are between 25 and 40 years old.
I feel like millennials were the first like people group to really get a bad rap.
We were. And then in addition to that, we're just... And now anything that the younger generations do that comes across as dumb or anything like that, people are like, millennials.
Oh,
no,
millennial.
That's not us at all.
they still always, yeah, you're right. The younger groups doing the silly stuff, they still, they'll be like, oh, dumb millennials.
Right.
I was like, that's not us. We're not doing that.
No, we're getting into the age where we're starting to do families. We're starting to buy houses and really
right.
getting into that. And, what's wild is the generation below us, the Gen Zers,
mm-hmm.
they're between 9 and 24 years old, and they're actually starting to get into the housing market too.
Right.
Significantly younger than millennials did. So you have two generations really competing for those starter homes, the affordable homes, that sort of thing.
Sure.
Then you have the Generation X, which is the generation above us, and then the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not selling their houses as much as they used to. They're holding on to them. And many of them are buying second and third homes, either for investment reasons or for a
right.
vacation home. So then the silent generation, the generation above them.
Yeah, I didn't even know about these people.
Before this week, I didn't either. But apparently, they are not wanting to go to senior living facilities.
And good for them.
Good for them.
I mean, yeah, I don't think that I would want to. I mean, unless it just became, you know, a life and death or a dire matter, I don't necessarily want to be plucked from my home and go to a
Some of them are really nice.
A hotel for seniors.
Right. Some of them are really nice.
They are, yes, they are. And
but they're expensive.
They're insanely expensive. And that's always been troubling to me because I've had family who's had to be in the facilities, and it's hard. I know there's a lot of work, and there's a lot of care, and there's a lot of things that go into it. So, but the cost has always just been very mind-boggling to me. But so yeah, they're not wanting to abandon ship on their house.
So that's hitting the supply side, and then they're actually downgrading houses, some of them,
right,
to what we would consider starter homes. Mm-hmm. So you have the silent generation coming down and competing with Gen Zers and millennials for the same houses.
So you can kind of see, you know, when you're laying it out, supply and demand. You can kind of see where this is bottlenecking a little bit. So
supply down, demand up.
It's very simple, but it's really complex. It's more complex than that. But just to keep it at, you know, like a high level, all of these younger generations battling for these starter homes, small homes. We've not done our due diligence to keep houses built over the last 20 years like we could have. So limited product, and then you have the older generation downsizing, fighting the younger generation for those starter homes.
Absolutely.
It's pandelirium.
And me and Josh, you and I both, we recently bought houses.
We did.
And it was not a fun experience for me.
No, so mine was last summer, and
mine was March of 2020, so right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah. You're about a little over two years in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were some of the first people to have to do online applications and everything online.
Right.
And they hadn't necessarily ironed everything out at that point.
Yeah, it's you know, luckily I have some really good realtor friends who make the process as painless as possible. But I tell you what, buying a home and selling a home stresses me out to the max.
Even owning a home, there's things I didn't even consider.
Right.
Just if you hear something in the hallway, you used to be scared because it was a ghost or something like that. Now it's, what's wrong with my house? How much is this going to cost?
Right. Well, so here's the other fun thing about this. So we've made it very clear there's a supply and demand problem within our folks just here in Tennessee, right? So let's throw another problem into the mix. Another problem into the mix is everyone's moving to Tennessee.
Everyone.
So let's take this already terrible problem and let's just toss some gas on it.
Which is also expensive.
The gas, good luck if you're wanting to just burn it. You have more money than I do because I don't have the extra funds to just do that. But yeah, so everyone is coming to Tennessee. You know, what do we got? What do we say? Like Illinois, Florida.
California.
Right.
Georgia.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
And I mean, I get it. I understand why. But we have no vacancy. We just need the big old sign that's flashing that says no vacancy.
No vacancy.
Try North Carolina.
No homes for sale.
Try North Carolina. See what they got. But then that kind of rolls us into the next part of it. So why are these people moving here? Why are folks coming to Tennessee?
Well, you and I looked at it, and we came up with three reasons. The first one is low taxes. Tennessee has no tax on salaries or wages, which is a huge advantage over a lot of the other states.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
We also got rid of the hall tax, which was a 6% tax Tennesseans had to pay on all dividends and interests on bonds, anything like that.
Right.
And those are huge. You're saving money automatically just by not having to give the government as much of your income.
Right. And also, you know, taxes are always huge deal, hot topic with everyone, and rightfully so, because I don't think there's anyone who wants to just hand over money to the government that they don't absolutely have to.
Well, you want to pay your fair share, and your fair share just happens to be smaller in Tennessee than a lot of other states.
Right. So also, the cost of living is extremely low here, and which is really funny to me. I'm from Tennessee, but everyone's just always up in arms about, well, this is so expensive, or I can't pay these taxes, or this is crazy. People, we live in a very cheap neck of the woods.
People are coming here to pay what we are paying.
And I it's almost like that you need, I want to just give people kind of that dose of reality, like, hey, we really have it pretty good. Let's not rock the boat too much, okay? So what are some of the cost of living things that really drive people down to this area?
So first of all, Tennessee is the sixth lowest cost of living in the nation, and that's according to a 2021 annual average. We pay about 10.3% below the national average. That comes in the form of groceries, where we pay 5% less. Utilities, where we pay 4% or 5% less. But it really seems to come from the rural areas. They're sometimes paying 30 to 40% less for everything than we are here. And we're spending less time in our cars than most people, even though we have to drive further.
Right.
There's not the traffic.
Yeah, you're not sitting on the interstate for an hour trying to commute to work.
Right, and that, you know, that turns around, you're spending less on gas that way.
See, and that's the thing. I think it's easier for people like us to see that, just given, you know, things like budgeting, and all that. But I think people who don't have a firm grasp on all that stuff easily overlook all that.
Absolutely.
But those really add up. I mean, gas right now, $5 a gallon. Imagine if you were commuting every day to work, you were sitting on the interstate for an hour.
Just watching that gas go down.
Just watching the gas go down. I mean, do you imagine how much that would add up in 1 week?
It'd be frustrating.
It's insane. So, and obviously, it's beautiful here.
It is. That's the third reason. We have outdoor activities.
Right.
It's mountains outside your door. It's beautiful.
You know, and especially here in Northeast Tennessee, we're so close to everything. So if you think about it, we're in a really good kind of radius area of all things, like big cities, beaches, just pretty much anywhere you'd want to be.
When was the last time you had to drive more than 30 minutes for something that you needed in this area?
I don't know.
Unless it's something special, like right, we have to go to this specific restaurant that we had in North Carolina or something like that.
No, I honestly
hardly ever.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. But it makes sense for people to come here. It's beautiful. We have most of the seasons, even though a lot of them are slowly either getting longer or getting shorter. We still have our seasons. And
they're pretty mild.
Pretty mild, yeah. And the mountains, Dollywood.
Dollywood.
Shout out to Dolly Parton. She's listening. Give us a like and a share.
She's our other listener.
She's our other listener, yeah. So all of that's well and good. We've clearly identified there's a problem. There's not enough houses. There's more people in the market. And then there's even more people migrating into the market. Huge problem. So do you think, given all of this, that we can expect the housing prices to go down anytime soon?
This is where we have a drum roll, right?
Yeah. Yeah, drum roll. Boom.
I don't expect them to. I don't think housing prices are going to go down anytime soon. The demand is really high. The supply is going to have to ramp up significantly to meet demand, and we have years of undersupply to make up for. Even if housing prices do slow down or even decrease, we're seeing an increase in interest rates and the costs associated with financing homes, which means at the end of it, when you're done paying your mortgage, you may actually end up paying more money even though your house cost less.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because you and I were talking about this yesterday in my office, you know, trying to take complex things and make them simple, and I feel like this is a very good example of that. So we were talking about, you know, right now if you pay $500,000 for a house, but you get a 4% interest rate, how that could be misleading if you were to pay $250,000 for a house, but have like an 8% interest rate. Right. Talk about, can you like talk about the long term of that, like over the 30 years?
Absolutely. So every time we make a payment towards our mortgage, a certain percent of that is going to go towards the interest, and another percent is going to go towards what you're actually paying towards your principal. And then you have insurance and escrow and all of that added in there. When you make a payment towards a house with a higher interest rate, that lowers the percentage that you're making towards principal. So it either takes you longer to pay it off, but they usually cut you off at about 30 years, which just means that your housing bill, your mortgage bill, is higher. Mm-hmm. So it adds all up. So if you did $250,000 house at the 4.something% interest, you're going to be paying about the same amount as someone who bought a $200,000 house paying a 7% interest.
Right.
Over the course of the entire mortgage.
And I think that's crucial, because I think that just from an outsider's perspective, like me, with the housing craze, there's not a lot of talk about interest rates as much as there is the cost of the house, right? And that's troubling to me, because I think people are getting lost in the weeds on that. Sure, the houses are expensive. I can't do anything about it. We just talked about it. Supply and demand. We don't have enough houses. But I would rather people be more in tune with what those interest rates are, because I think those are just on the back burner, and they don't really take those into consideration. But
you want to look at overall cost.
Sure.
Do the math. Call us. We'll do the math for you.
Right.
Figure out what it's going to cost you in the long run, and then we can do little comparisons here or there.
So to just kind of wrap up on all of this, Tennessee has no vacancy. We love you guys. Come visit us. Come spend your money here.
Go to Dollywood.
Go to Dollywood. Do the stuff and the things. Go hiking. But then go back home. Right?
It's right. Like, that's where
we're at. We can't accommodate you right now. And I'm afraid that we're not going to be able to for a while. So hopefully we can get this situation figured out. I know that it's tough on people, and it's kind of a double-edged sword, per se, because people are seeing, oh, you can sell your house for this much money.
Right.
And, oh, my goodness, how tempting is that? Like, because you know what you paid for it. You know what you've put into it. And when that price can be almost double, close to it, who's not going to be tempted by that?
Oh, I mean, I enjoy going on Zillow and seeing how much my house is supposedly worth now. It doesn't do anything for me.
It's
but
like, man, I'm rich.
But it makes me feel good.
Yeah. So, but again, the other part of that, the other side of that sword is, you got to have somewhere to live.
You do.
And it's like, unless you have a secondary home, something in your back pocket, you're going to have to turn right around and spend the higher prices on another home. So it's like, are you really?
And that's one of the things we didn't really talk about a lot.
Right.
If I'm in California and I have a small home that's worth $500,000, imagine what kind of home you could trade, you know, sell that for, move to Tennessee. Imagine the size of home you could get in Tennessee for $500,000.
It would be impressive.
It would be.
Probably a place where you would host people and have gatherings.
You'd have rooms that you never even go in. Yeah. You just clean them every now and then.
Yeah. Swimming pool, probably on the lake.
Probably.
You know, living it rough. But, well, I'm glad we were able to talk about this. I like being able to discuss the kind of the relevant current events and happenings. And by all means, if anyone's listening and they have questions from a financial angle on this stuff, we would love to help out. And you know, we are really good about being able to break it down to a very tangible a tangible element where people can understand and make sense of it. So as we tail off here, we've got a big Memorial Day weekend coming up.
We do.
You have any big plans?
My wife and I are actually going to the beach next week. So we're leaving and going to experience the whole crowd at the beach.
You all get to take vacations. I don't get to take vacations anymore. I'm either too busy or too poor. So I don't. You enjoy that. Send me pictures.
I'll send you pictures.
Yeah, I'll appreciate it. Send me pictures. And then also, you know, we spoke about this on the last podcast, but we've got our groundbreaking coming up on June 7th at 4 p.m. And we are really excited about that.
We are. I think it's going to be a great opportunity. I know you all talked about, like you said, the last podcast, but having our own space is going to be nice.
And it's going to be such a nice facility, and it's going to be so good to have that breath of fresh air and that new space to be able to work in. So,
if you ever can't find me, just expect me to be on the rooftop.
On the rooftop, yeah. I hope to spend many evenings on the rooftop, maybe with some Wi-Fi and just relaxing.
Absolutely.
Until, you know, our lovely, mild summers roll in.
Right. The and, pollining.
The pollining and all of that stuff. But, well, good. Well, Brian, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for dropping in. It's nice to have some new blood on the show. So we appreciate it.
It's a lot more pleasant than the cameras.
Oh, I know, right? You did not do well with the cameras. I could just...
There's multiple people standing behind them staring at you.
Yeah, I could literally see your soul leaving your body as you just sat there and sweat.
I hadn't slept for a few nights. It was... You can both over and under prepare, it turns out, for
right,
something.
Right. Well, we hope to have Peter back tomorrow, but I also hope that you can also sit in some more.
I'd love that.
Yeah, I'd love to have kind of your views and opinions on things. So thanks again for joining us. And everyone, again, this is the Bullseye Podcast brought to you by AFI Advisors. If you have any questions that you'd like to submit for the podcast, please send those to connect@AFIAdvisors.com. Those will come directly to me, and I'll be sure that we get those addressed and get you a solid answer. Also, be sure to check us out on all of our social media accounts. And also, please share this podcast. We think we're spreading some relevant information. And plus, you just found out today that Dolly Parton's a listener. So if Dolly does it, you know it's good. Right, Brian?
That's right. That is right.
Well, I hope everyone has a good weekend. Brian, thanks again. And we will see you all next week.